Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to It's Rainmaking Time. This is Kim Greenhouse. I'm delighted to have Carol Gurney with us today, the author of The Language of Animals, Seven Steps to Communicating with Animals. She is the founder of the Gurney Institute, a global center dedicated to expanding and sustaining the credibility and integrity of the animal communications industry. She is a world-renowned animal communications expert. I've long been interested in this subject. So many of us have. What is it about our animals that we need to know that they are communicating to us that we don't know? How do we get closer to our animals? How do we pick up things we need to know that they're telling us that we don't know that they're telling us? Ladies and gentlemen, welcome Carol Gurney to It's Rainmaking Time. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, Kim, thanks for inviting me. I'm delighted to be here.
I have always known that animals communicate using telepathy and some obvious behavior, and they communicate through their very presence. And I think many of us know that and accept that, but I don't think many of us have come to accept that they really do communicate. They have their own way of talking. Talk to us about it.
You know, they do. It's a lot of people think that this is psychic work in it, and it isn't. It basically is that animals do have a language all their own. So just like if we were learning to speak Spanish or Italian or French, they have their own language. And how they communicate to us in that language is through images. They can show us events that have meant something to them. You know, their likes or their dislikes. They may show us running in a park or playing in the snow. Or maybe they don't like their nails cut or being groomed. They communicate with their feelings. So they can share their feelings with us. Images, thoughts, they can even share how they feel in their bodies physically, so they can share with us those sensations so that we're better able to help clients and eventually help the veterinarians fine-tune their diagnosis, because a lot of times people don't know what's going on with the animals. They're like, I wish only if the animal could talk. And then the clients will call and say, Carol, we need help. Or the vets will call and say, we need help. We don't understand what's going on. And we listen to the animal, and the animal tells us how they feel in their body. They don't diagnose themselves, obviously, that they don't know how to do that, as we don't. But they can certainly share how they feel in their body, where they're uncomfortable, the sensation, and that really helps a veterinarian fine-tune their diagnosis. So I think what's important is to know that we all did this as kids. Most of us did. You know, we may have gone to our parents and said, oh, mommy, what the dog told me, and typically the response is, oh, my gosh, don't let anybody hear you saying that because they're going to think we're crazy over here. But we're raised in such an intellectual society that those people that did that when they were little, they began to repress that only because they were told that it wasn't real, it didn't exist. So most everybody who is sensitive to animals, they do already hear the animals. But what's happening is it happens so naturally that they don't know it's the animal talking with them. They're just going around their day thinking that that's their own thought that's coming up. And they're not stopping to say, oh, that's my, you know, my animal talking to me, because it happens naturally, just like breathing happens naturally, and we don't stop and say, okay, right now my body is doing this. No, it's just a natural ability. And to help the audience understand that, I was at a ranch, this was many years ago, and the person who owned the ranch was having her trainer ride her horse. And I was standing in the beginning, the entranceway of the arena, and the horse was coming around, and he looked at me, and I heard him say in a thought, I want my person to ride me. Why isn't she? So I told him back quietly that I didn't know and that I would find out for him and let him know. So later on, after the trainer finished, Cheryl, who had the horse, came up, and she said to me, you know, Carol, I don't know why I keep having my trainer ride the horse. I think I'm going to start riding him again. And I looked at her and I said, and I bet you think that's your own thought, Cheryl. And she looked at me really strange-like, and she said, well, who else is going to be? And I said, but it wasn't your thought. Your horse sent you that message. And so and she said, but I never would have known that. And because it happens naturally. She said, things like that happen to me all the time. I can walk up and down the barn aisle and know what horse might need attention, or, you know, what horse might not be feeling well. And I said, that's because you're really sensitive. So that's kind of an example so people might understand that they're already doing it, which is the great news about this.
I know at the beginning in your articulation of what you don't do, you said it's not psychic work, but we're all now at a point where we know $50 million 20 or 25 years ago was spent at the Stanford Institute Research and at the government labs to invest in remote viewing, to go back and pick up data that has happened in the past. And we know now that the world we thought was isn't. We're in a psychodynamic, highly energetic world that's multidimensional. We don't even have evidence that the past, the present, and the future are all distinct dimensions, that
right.
They're all happening. There's information coming through telling us that on the human distinction level, they're happening at different time frames, but they're happening in different dimensions, possibly. So our whole notion of time, of space, of communication, there's a lot of people now that can accept that we thought we knew it all and we don't. And so there is this huge receptivity to telepathy. Isn't a part of your work tuning in to the field of telepathy between all living things?
Yes, it is, but there's a distinction between psychic work and telepathy in that, and telepathy meaning animal communication. What happens with most psychics is that, yes, they tune in and we are all psychic because all it means is heightened awareness. How aware do we want to be? Period. We all have the ability. We all have the ability to communicate with animals, but do we want to, you know? Do we want to become fluent, which would take practice and time and study? But what happens with the language is that psychics will also tune into, say, your future. You'll ask about a relationship. Oh, yes, it's coming in about 5 years. The person might look like this. The name's this, blah, blah, blah. But they also use other methods to get there. They may use tarot cards. They may use spirit guides to gather that information. And sometimes they are not talking directly to you as an individual. What we do with animal communication, and this is where I like to keep it, is very authentic in that there is a lot now in the field of animal communication, people now doing shamanic journeying to get the information about the animal or using spirit guides to get the information about the animals. That really is not necessary because the animal is right there. Why would you be going to other means when the animal is right there? And what happens with that, you begin to muddy the waters, especially with animal communication. People who don't have good boundaries will start projecting their own preconceived notions, their own belief systems onto the animal and to the client. And that's where it becomes muddied. And I like to keep it authentic and real and keep the integrity of the communication direct with the animals. So that's where I think the field is getting off a bit, and that's where I try to keep it, you know, on track.
Isn't a huge part of what you're teaching for people to learn how to receive communication from animals?
Yes, and what I tell people is I encourage them to take psychic development classes. I encourage them to take classes in being aware of your own intuition. Take shamanic journeying because that all helps us listen, be aware. I mean, the more that we are aware of our own needs, you know, what are our own physical needs? Do we listen to our bodies? Do we listen to our own emotions and feelings? You know, are we aware of our own spiritual needs? We all need to develop those skills so that we can then apply that ability to listen to the animals, because the animals can tell us everything about themselves. They can tell us about their past, what they've experienced, how they feel in their bodies. They can talk to us once they're in spirit form. They can talk to us right before they're leaving and tell us whether they're ready to go, whether they can leave on their own, whether they need assistance. They can share things sometimes that they know about us. You know, they will oftentimes say, one cat told me that once he was in spirit form, he said, tell her to wear that necklace. And he showed me this thing around her neck with this like little box on it. And then he said, She needs to do that. She needs to do that. He was adamant about my telling her that. And I told her, and she said, well, that's my alert button. She said, I've taken it off. And she said, I'm not exercising very much now because my stimulus was him. That's what we used to do. And now that he's gone, I haven't been doing that, and I'm not wearing my alert button. I said, but you need to. He's really worried about you, you know, so that they know so much about ourselves.
I just lost my cat of almost 16 years.
Oh.
And it was so traumatic. And everybody has these stories. Her name was Simba. Actually wish I had called you. Do you talk to the spirits of animals that have passed?
Yes, yes. And, you know, I didn't know that that was possible in the beginning of my work because no one had ever asked me. And I had a client call, and she said, you know, would you be willing to do this for me? And I said, I don't know if I can do it, but I'll try. And it was one of the most heartwarming experiences I've had. And I got in touch with the dog. And she had certain questions. She said, Carol, I want to know if his transition was okay. I want to know where he is, what it looks like, if he's with anybody, and does he have a message? So I said, boy, I better get going. And got in touch with him. And this is what he had to say. He said, tell her my transition was as easy as my life was with her. And tell her it's very vast here. I can see forever, and it goes on and on and on. And tell her there's lots of music here. And if I want to see a hill of sheep, I do. And if I don't, I don't. I had no idea why he was telling me that. And I said, well, do you have a message for her? He said, oh, yes. Tell her when she hears music in her heart, she'll know that I'm near. Well, I had no idea what that meant. But when we talked on the phone, because I do most of my consultations long distance, I asked her, I was telling her the information, and she said to me, oh, Carol, this is a miracle for me. She said, first of all, she said, you don't know this. She said, but we used to herd sheep. He used to herd sheep. I used to watch and love, you know, watching him do his thing. And she said, so that's why he's talking about the sheep. But she said, our favorite thing to do is to listen to classical music.
Wow.
And today, she said, I had him cremated. I picked up his ashes, put the urn on the mantle, and she said a piece of classical music came on that I hadn't heard before. And she said, at that moment, she said, I could feel him in my heart. So she said, the words you're using, the description, she said, what you're telling me is that what I experienced today wasn't wishful thinking. I wasn't making that up, that was really him. I felt it was, but, you know, we think that we're making it up. And she said, thank you for giving me that gift. So this is the power of being able to listen to the animals, to be able to do that. And for me, I stand in the middle of the love. I get to experience the love that the animal has for the person and the love that the person has for the animal. So it's just a very rewarding experience. And especially, too, when we're able to help find lost animals, relocate the animal so that they can get back home, you know, or to help an animal who they don't know what is going on with them physically, and we help them, you know, with that. And one story, just so people can see the level of emotions that animals can experience and how it can manifest into physical behavior and odd behavior. This was a horse, Timmy. He was up in Ojai, and he had developed narcolepsy, and that means that they fall asleep standing up and crash on the ground. And then he was charging people and wouldn't let anybody in his corral. This was unusual behavior. The vet came, and he told my client, Denny, he said, you know, Denny, I think you may have to put him down because he's going to hurt himself or he may injure someone very badly. And he said, the only thing I know to do is suggest that you call Carol Gurney and see if she can help you. I called. I actually went up to do an emergency session with her. And as I was approaching the corral, I heard him say, and I felt so sad, grief beyond belief, depression, and I heard him say, I don't want to live anymore. There's no reason to live. And then he said to me, where is she? And he showed me an image of a mare. And he said, where is she? Where is she? And some tears were coming to me because I just couldn't contain all that sadness and grief that he was feeling. So I asked Denny, I said, who is this mirror that he's talking about? But it's like almost like, you know, he's devastated, you know. And she said, oh, my gosh, she looked at her friend. She said, oh, my gosh, that was Delight. But we put her down 2 weeks ago. And how we did it was recommended that we take Timmy out in the pasture, put her down, take her body away, and then bring him back to his corral. Well, when he got back, she was gone. So, he didn't know what happened to her. So how I handled that was I explained the truth. I told him that, they felt that she was sick and a lot of pain, and they felt that it was time for her to leave her body, and so that she was now in spirit form. And so I apologized. The next step was to apologize and said, you know, I'm so sorry that they didn't allow you to say goodbye, but they had no idea that you needed to do that. And then the third thing for him was I said, you know, I think you have much to live for. I know Denny has learned a lot. You've enriched her life tremendously. And there's much for you to still teach her. And then he showed me where he was in pain. And then I suggested that she get a vet out who was an acupuncturist and chiropractor to help him. But I said, you need to now sit down with him and talk to him. You can talk to him aloud and explain to him, what have you learned from him? How has he enriched your life? And be very, very specific about that. I said, he really needs to know that, to know that there's a purpose in living and staying in his physical body. She did that. He never fell to the ground. He never fell asleep standing up like that ever again, and he stopped charging immediately. It was overnight. The behavior changed overnight. And yet, everybody was thinking, oh, he must have a brain tumor. You know, they were going on the physical thing. Well, it was totally emotional. Totally emotional. So it's just a great story that really helps people understand the depth of the emotions that animals experience and how it can manifest into physical behavior, you know, and physical ailments as well.
I talk to animals all the time. Walking down the street, driving in the car, I sing to them. There's a whole part of my life the public has no idea, but the people that are around me are always like, oh my God, here it goes, you know, and the animals start following me, they start crowding around the whole bit. There's a restaurant right by where I live, an Italian restaurant, and they have this big green bird.
Parrot?
It's a parrot, but it's like a...
Well, it's not a macaw.
It's a macaw.
Okay.
I guess it's called a military macaw. Anyways,
oh, okay.
Her name is Angel.
Okay.
So I go in, I sing to her, and
I bet they love it. I bet you're like a magnet.
Thank you. Flattery will get you everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, but who wouldn't want to be around you when you're happy like that, you know?
It's true, I think, with anybody. But one of the things that happens is this bird is put in the kitchen where the dishwasher is at night. In a cage for hours and hours and hours where they're clanking and banging dishes. They let the nails run all the way around to the side. They don't cut the nails. They don't groom it. It never has water near it long enough, et cetera. And I know that there's neglect going on.
Yeah.
But anyway, I come, I sing. It's a whole thing that starts happening, you know. So one day I was singing, Angel, Angel, I love you. And then she walks toward me and I go, somebody help me. I love you, Angel. Somebody help me!
Oh, how great.
Anyway, it's kind of wild. I'm obviously not a singer. We all know this.
Better than me.
I was used to close down an act at Misha's Cabaret one night. I took this course called Sing From Your Soul 20 years ago, and I ended up clearing out the whole place. They, like, were running for their lives. Then really isn't a part of it training people to become sensitive to listening to the animals, looking at their behavior, receiving them, and trusting what they get?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, I've been doing this for 24 years. And, you know, my expertise is really the teaching. Yes, I still do consultations, and I will always do that. You know, that's how I learned. But I teach what I do, and that's my expertise in the field. That's what I'm known for, is one of the best teachers out there in the field. And so I have workshops. I'll do two-day workshops where people can come, and I will actually talk about telepathy, share the different techniques. You know, how does it work? How do they communicate with us, and how do we communicate back? And then we'll do a series of exercises to help them understand and get ready. Be- Because one of the things that we need to do is really allow ourselves to relax. We need to relax our minds and our bodies. And we'll go through that. We'll actually do a telepathic exercise with people, which is absolutely floors them because they can't believe that they can actually do this without talking verbally. And then in the afternoon, we'll communicate with three of my animals here. And we'll ask them questions that they have no idea what the answers are. And when they get it, they're just, you should see it, huge smiles on their face. And because what their information that they get is very specific, and there's no way that they could have known what they got beforehand. And then the second day, what we do is we do it long distance. Everybody brings photos of their animals. They exchange photos, and they get to do this long distance, knowing that it's sometimes easier than doing it with a person, with an animal in person. So it's a great confidence-building workshop. So people begin there. And sometimes that's all that people want to do. But if people want to continue on, that's where I started developing, you know, 24 years ago, the certification training program. And it's the only one of its kind in the field.
Have you traveled to other countries and checked out animal communication trainings and experts and people in the realm of what you do around the world?
You know, I haven't so much checked other people out. They have... You know, we have emailed each other occasionally, and we'll talk about, you know, our belief systems or maybe share some cases periodically. But I have traveled, you know, because my book is in Europe as well. So I've been to England several times. I've been to Finland, Holland. I'll be going to Germany in October. And next year I'll be in Switzerland, and one of my students is trying to organize me to get to Japan and Hong Kong. So, you know, I go wherever the need is, and then I travel all throughout the United States. I've been, you know, just about everywhere. And, again, doing these workshops so people can understand they've had this ability, and what I'm doing is coming along and helping them be more aware of it and understand how it works for them. So the training program is really for those people who want to do this on a professional level, so that they learn all of the different aspects of animal communication, which there are many. So it's an 18-day program, over 300 hours, and it takes about a year and a half to 2 years to finish it. And they have to do 64 case studies. So it's quite intense, but it needs to be, because people really need to know that this is a profession, and they need to be trained in it. It isn't. And what's happening, unfortunately, people are doing two-day workshops, and because they get what they call a few hits, they feel that they can do it. And by no means can they. They don't know what they don't know, you know? And those people can be quite dangerous in the field because they have no boundaries. They can project onto the client. You know, they may be talking to someone totally different and really not that animal. So,
are there techniques that you have in your training to make sure that they're grounded in the direct communication telepathically with that animal?
Oh, you betcha. In every case that they do, they must do, before they even communicate with the animal, they just have to sit with the animal and get what I call the core essence or the personality. And they have to come up with words that best describe that animal. Is that animal a clown, a nurturer, teacher, philosopher, curious, explorer, you know, whatever? And then they have to ask that animal to share their likes and dislikes, what their home looks like, things that they have to get validated by that person to convince that person to test themselves and to certainly convince me that they are truly, truly connected with the right animal.
This telepathic ability is a faculty that is either getting developed or it's not, right?
It does exist, you know.
Yes.
It's existed for eons. We don't really, just like in our telepathic exercise that we do person to person here, we don't need to talk, you know. And people do this with people all the time, and I'll say, you know, if you're at work, a friend of yours came by, and you said, you know, how are you doing? And the person said, oh, I'm fine. And they walked away, and you're left with the feeling of, boy, that person, I don't know, they're saying they're fine, but I don't feel that they're okay. I felt this about them or whatever. Later on at lunchtime, the person comes by and says, you know, you want to go for lunch? You go for lunch, and the person says, you know, I just didn't want to talk about it when I saw you this morning, but there is something going on with me. And there's that validation. There's that validation. You already felt it from the person. So, again, what happens is we just have to become more aware of our intuition and be more trusting of ourselves. And that's where when we get validation from the person who has that animal that we're practicing with, that's our confirmation to know that I am really connected, you know?
What happens when your student's wrong? Do they lose their confidence?
In the beginning, there is a space to be wrong. But sometimes, unfortunately, what happens is their personality is such that they have to be right all the time. That person is going to take a longer time to develop because they want to be so right. They're not allowing themselves to be that relaxed, to know that there is an education in also making mistake. And I tell them, use it. Meaning, when you make a mistake and you are off, simply go back to what it was like, retrack your steps, go back and go, okay, when I got this and it was accurate, how did it feel in my body? When I got this and it was inaccurate, how did it feel? What was I doing? Did my energy move up into my head? Did I start trying too hard? Was I starting to drift into my own thoughts? You can retrack and really go back to what were you doing. That is huge. That's a huge learning curve, because now we get to see what does it really feel like to me when I'm truly connected and what is it like when I'm off, so that we can constantly stay focused, you know, which is, it's hard to do because we as human beings process 40,000 thoughts a day. And I tell people, you know, we don't even need to engage in conversation with anybody else because we're having a great time by ourselves, you know. But so what we need to do is right there is a great learning curve in what do I do to reduce the number of thoughts that I have so that I can certainly listen to what an animal has to tell me. And, you know, I encourage people, maybe meditate if that helps you relax. And reduce your number of thoughts. Or maybe a walk in the park. Maybe it's Tai Chi. Maybe it's yoga. But explore, you know, what works for you. Because what happens is when an animal, if we compare ourselves to a telephone and the animal tries to ring us up telepathically and send us a message, usually, unfortunately, what the animal gets is a busy signal. It's just on the phone all day long, you know? And so I tell them we need to get off the phone so that we can hear them. They're talking to us a lot, you know, all the time. People get those stares, and they'll say, I know, my dog just sits there, cocks his head, and just looks at me. And she says, I know she's trying to tell me something. I just can't get it, you know. And for people to know that, it's more challenging to communicate with our own animals because we know them so well. You know, and we're emotionally connected, just like a doctor, you know, won't do surgery or won't do, you know, medicine on their own family members because they're too close. Psychics don't usually work with their own family members because they're too close. Eventually we can get, you know, through that, but in the beginning it's really challenging to do that.
We live at a time also where being a medical intuitive, this ability to see into the body, the obstructions or difficulties that are happening in the body,
yeah,
disease manifestations, it's getting out there that this realm exists.
Yeah.
And so when you're working with vets, are they kind of underground? They don't want their clients to know that they're consulting you regarding this, quote, patient, this animal? Is it still pretty much kept under wraps because it's still not mainstream yet?
You know, yes and no. It really depends on the level of security of that veterinarian. If they are very secure in their work and in themselves personally, they would have no problem expressing that. And it's such a great education for them to be doing that. And then there are other vets that wouldn't even consider, you know, calling us because it's just not in their belief system at all. You know, a lot of people, unfortunately, still believe that animals don't have thoughts and feelings, and we know that obviously they do. So it just really depends on the vet. What's wonderful about the program is one of my students in North Carolina finished the program. She's one of my associates now in the Institute. She did, they have to do 20 hours of community service, and she did that with a vet clinic. And the vet was so impressed that she now has Linda on staff with her one day a week, and all she does, she goes in there and she has all of the clients ready for her to communicate with the animals telepathically. And the client will say, you know, Linda, I need help in this area. I know that there's something going on, so I'd like you to, you know, find out for me. And, you know, the client has emergency, she'll call Linda. Linda, I need help. What's going on with this animal? Isn't that fascinating?
It's pretty, said, you know, pretty
Carol,
remarkable.
Had I not taken your program, and what I also have them do is at the very end of the program do a 30-minute lecture on animal communication, and Linda chose to lecture to a group of veterinarians. And so then she takes that lecture, she presents to us, her peers, and then we critique her. And she said, had I not done that, had I not taken your program, done 64 cases, so I really knew what I was doing, I would never have been able to do this with the veterinarian. And she said, now the vet has asked me to lecture, you know. And so, you know, there it is. And I'm like, oh, this is so fabulous, you know. So fabulous that vets are coming along, you know, and beginning to see of what value we can be to them, because we're there to support them, to enhance what they do, and only make things better.
Have you ever been wrong?
Oh, sure. Sure. And that was more in my earlier days, because what I chose to do was I sold my business that I had at the time, and I took a year off, and I did research. And the research for me was to do consultations free of charge, because I didn't know what it meant to me. I thought, what am I supposed to do with this? How can I be of help to people? you know, what is this all about? So in that research, I made my mistakes, you bet so. But the mistakes helped me to learn more, you know, to better increase my skills and my accuracy for people. So I sure have.
It's like anything, isn't it? You develop this faculty.
That's how you learn. And if you choose not to learn from it, guess what? You don't get very good at it. You don't get very good at it because you're holding yourself back because you don't want to be wrong. So to me, I found telepathy one of the most challenging things that I've ever done in my entire life, because I was a really intellectual person. I wasn't into my feelings, wasn't comfortable with that. But boy, did I just stuck with it. It was, I thought to myself, you know, I believe that other people could do it, but I wasn't sure whether I could. And I thought, if I could do this, if I could hear what they, you know, were thinking, if I could feel their feelings, oh my gosh, it would be a dream come true. And I'm so glad I stuck with it, because I'm an extremely determined person. I probably needed to have like 10,538 validations before I could really believe it, because I was a black and white person. But when I started getting things that were so specific, and the people would say, how did you know that? I said, you know, I don't know. I just asked the animal. And I started seeing that happen over and over and over. And then people started coming to me for problem solving. And when I saw the problems resolve, and I thought, oh, my gosh, there really is something to this.
Do you need to see a photo of the animal in order to...
I don't, but most people do. And some people don't. I certainly... in the beginning, photos are really helpful, because just to make sure that you're going to connect with the right animal. Mm-hmm. Because suppose somebody's asking you to talk to Jesse, who lives with a person in Alaska. But if you don't have the photo, there could be other Jessies who are a border collie and are black and white. You know, and you could be tuning into a Jesse who fits that description, but they live in Colorado and not Alaska.
Are you near a computer right now?
Yeah.
Can you go to It's Rainmaking Time?
Okay, I've got it.
All right, and you go to animals on the categories.
Yeah.
Okay, and then you'll see a picture of Simba.
Oh, yeah.
Click Simba.
There's Simba.
Yeah, and you click that, and it'll go big.
Oh, that's beautiful.
So, you know, I'm sure that you are asked to read stuff fast and on the spot and all that, and I'm not sure it's appropriate on the show, but if you want to say anything, if you want to just kind of strut your stuff, if there's anything you'd like to do, you can. If not, we can cut this out.
You know what we can do is what I would love to do that, but I don't do things on the spot.
Yeah.
I just don't, because it's been proved to me from other communicators doing things on spot too that they've been wrong. And I've been wrong. And so what I do is I always gather the information and do it on my own time so that I make sure for me and for my client that I'm doing the best job possible.
Absolutely.
So that I can go deep enough and come back. Because a lot of times what happens is the people's thoughts can override.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I think, I just wouldn't want to do that.
That's brilliant. Yeah. Well, if you want to, you don't know anything other than what I told you. If you want to do anything and you want to say anything or input anything and call me back at any point, we will record it and we will put your hit on it. Because you don't know anything about Simba except that I love her. And, of course, everybody loves their animal, but that's all you know.
Yeah. Well, what I'd like to gather with you is just, you know, obviously I know your address, but when did she pass on?
February 18th, in my lap.
Okay. All right. And then what would be nice, though, is if you have questions for her, such as, what I help people understand is, you know, what questions they can ask, such as, is she with anybody? Is she coming back? You know, and if she's coming back, does she know what body she would? Did she want to stay in that particular type of body? You know, mm-hmm. That type of thing. So that there's lots of questions we can do here. You know what I mean?
Very interesting. There's a lot of people who may have their own intuitive capability, as all people do, or they have a developed sense, or somehow it allows them to be successful and effective at what they're doing. But somehow when it comes to this realm, let's say with the animal kingdom, there's a bifurcation that takes place, or a disassociation that takes place, that says, look, if they can't articulate in the language
right.
that we know of, then that which they're communicating is not language. And I loved your book titled The Language of Animals.
Right.
Seven Steps to Communicating with Animals, because you're tapping into their language.
Right.
But in part of your reading animals, you are translating, correct?
What I'm doing is, and I'm not reading animals, I'm actually talking with them, communicating with them, because we try to stay away from that word reading because it equals psychic. So we say that we're communicating with them. And what happens is this, sometimes we'll actually get the thought as they are saying it, you know, thinking it. And so we're using actual words of theirs. But a lot of times what happens with telepathy is they send us a concept and it is so quick that we have to then hunt for the words that best describes what they just told us. And sometimes it's difficult. Like if the animal is telling us, you know, how much they love their person, you know, just to say, yes, you know, so you say that they love you. It's not enough. So what we try to do is just hunt for a way of expressing that so people really get the level and the depth of it, you know?
One day I was laying in the bath, and I had two cats, Simba and Alex, her brother, who passed a few years back. And all of a sudden, I started to sing this song. And they sat like bookends and closed their eyes and looked majestically and looked up. And every time I sang the song, they either stopped or they came up to me and stopped. And that's where I started to test singing this song to other animals.
Uh-huh.
So I have the song for animals now. And almost like Dr. Seuss or whatever, I'm going to come out with this song. It's completely wild, but it works.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's great. You know, and I think one of the things it's really neat for people to know, and people get to learn this, when the students do their cases, the students will usually tell their clients, you know, and what's important to do is talk to your animal. Talk to them aloud. Tell them what's going on. Their clients will call back and go, I can't believe it, but it's making a huge difference in our relationship. And it does. People, you know, think that when they take them to the vet's office and they're going to stay overnight, you know, they just drop them off. And usually the animal is extremely stressed. So what I tell everybody is talk to your animals. Give them information. Animals crave it just like we do. If you're going to go to the vets, tell them that they're going there. Tell them what's going to happen. If they're going to stay overnight, show them an image of you coming to greet them the next day, putting that leash on their collar or putting the cat in the carrier, getting back in the car, and then arriving back home. And you do that by showing them images. It makes a world of difference because then the animal knows, I now know what's going to happen to me. Because otherwise they could be fearing that they're being abandoned and left there. So this happened with a client of mine. They had a cat that was soiling underneath the coffee table for 10 years. They finally decided to call. They had just found out about animal communication. And they said, you know, Carol, this has been happening for a long time. We need help. And we think that she's angry when we leave on vacation because that's the only time it happens. So I talked to her. Her name was Raspberry. And I said, Raspberry, your family feels that you're angry when they leave on vacation, and that's why you soil on the table. And her answer to me was, oh, no, I'm not angry. I'm scared. And then I said, you are? About what? And she said, I'm afraid that they'll never come home, that they won't come back. I didn't know how to resolve that, so I asked her, and I said, well, what do you need in order to change that behavior? She said, I need to know when they're going and when they're coming back, and that this is my family forever. I said, that's it? She said, yeah. So, and this was her concern because she had been abandoned prior in
Yeah. This sounds so wild. You can't imagine how wild this sounds.
But it happens. It's real.
I know.
It's real. It's unbelievable. So anyway, I tell the family this, and of course, so I tell the family, okay, if you're leaving for Thanksgiving, you've got to tell her you're going to be gone for 4 days. They know time. So tell her, I'm going to be gone for 4 days, and then you project an image of you coming back through the front door with your suitcase, and that you're going to be returning. So, you know, of course they felt a little bit weird of doing this. And I said, but what do you have to lose? You have everything to gain. So they did. They talked to her out loud and said, you know, we're going to be leaving for 4 days. We're coming back on Sunday, fourth day. And did their, you know, projecting the images. They called me up and said, Carol, she never soiled.
Wow.
She didn't soil. But maybe this is a coincidence. I said, yes, in 10 years it's a coincidence, but that's okay. So they left for 2 weeks Christmas time. Guess what? She never soiled another day in her life.
That's
you
amazing.
Know, I look at that and I go, you know, it's really, it amazes me. It just amazes me that they have the ability to change their behavior overnight. Overnight. Where we sometimes, it takes us 30 years to get over something.
There's a very well-known biologist and writer named Rupert Sheldrake.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
With the morphogenic field. And I know you're not talking about the morphogenic field right now, but in a sense, actually everything you're saying is proving that telepathy not only exists, but that it works.
Oh, absolutely.
Totally works. That communication is going on whether you actually speak the words or not. My other question to you is, you know how animals can tell when you're coming home?
Yeah.
And they run down the stairs or they run to something like that. Now, sometimes it's because they hear that car, but a lot of times they just know and they're running down.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you have adults that don't like animals and they project mean-spirited, negative emotions toward those animals. And then they say that the animals don't like them. Talk about that to kids for a moment, for any kids that might be listening, because some children and adults project distaste for certain animals that they decide they don't like. And then they can't understand why the animal doesn't then like them.
Well, what happens is those remember, if they can remember, that animals are feeling beings. They respond to our feelings and our energy that we are putting out. So if, and thoughts, because they're telepathic. So if they put out negative thoughts, that animal, it repels them. It's like putting bug spray out there. It's like you're spraying bug spray from your body to repel the animal from you. You know, the animal wouldn't want to go up to you if you are feeling badly about them. So it's like a radar screen. And so if you just give the animal a chance, you know, maybe what they could do is change those impressions, change those feelings, you know?
Even to test projecting different things to the animal, I mentor a 15-year-old boy who I've taken an interest in, and this is what's going on. I say to him, project positive things toward this cat. He goes, I hate that cat. I don't care if that cat dies or not. I hate that cat. It's just an example, and I say, well, until you start projecting positive things toward this cat's not going to like you and going to be afraid of you.
Yeah, yes, that definitely will respond that way because they have no other way of responding, you know, to that individual. So say, for instance, if I know a chiropractor used to tell me, you know, Carol, every time I meditate, all my animals come and want to be around me. And I said, well, who else wouldn't want to be? You're taking that time to feel good about yourself, to sit deeply and relaxed, and animals will come and surround you. So if the child could experiment with that and just have lovely thoughts, you know, change the thinking and see what response do you get from the animal. You know, do a little test for yourself.
I got another cat about a year ago, a year and a quarter ago, and ever since she had her ovaries taken out, she's been swiping and swatting and agitated a lot. It's a new cat, obviously. It can't be the same relationship I had with my other one, Simba, but just as an example, I play a lot with her, and I take her out with me. She will not be put on a leash by any means. Of course, getting a cat on a leash is a whole other thing, but just for their protection. The reality is she is kind of kooky. She is kind of kooky, but I accept that. But I always tell her I love her, and I always play with her, but that part of her just doesn't shift. I think you cannot expect changes in an animal if they're living in an environment where they know one of the people in that environment does not like it.
Well, here's what happens, too, is those negative thoughts, because animals are feeling beings, if they're pretty intense, as I said, they're like a radar, like your spraying bug, it actually feels like the animal's being hit. You don't actually need to touch the body of an animal for them to feel it in their body. An actual thought, and pretty intense, can actually feel like you just hit an animal. That's how sensitive they are. So, yeah.
That's a very important thing for people to know, that animals pick up everything we think and feel about them and what's going on in our environments.
Yeah, and here's an example. Because what happens is animals will reflect our behavior, what's going on internally with us, things that we are not dealing with, things that we are not nurturing about ourselves, you know, aspects of ourselves that we're not nurturing. This can happen a lot. So just like that cat, here's a situation. A client calls me because her dog will go on attack mode when she is in a room with people and the dog is there. If you remove her from the room, the dog is fine with the other people. If she comes back into the room, the dog goes on the attack mode to the other people. Now, they were adopting a baby and wanted to make sure that he wouldn't go after the baby. So when I talked to the dog, I couldn't get anything. There was no response. And I thought, oh my gosh, what happened to my abilities? I just, you know, I lost them. Where'd they go? And so when we talked, I told her that I didn't think I could help her, but we started talking about how she is in her social life. And basically, the bottom line was, she said, you know, Carol, I'm quite uncomfortable around people. You know, I said, well, how uncomfortable do you get? And she said, I feel like I could get hurt by people. And the light bulb went on, and she said to me, oh, my gosh, this isn't about my dog, is it? It's about me. She has an innermost fear of being hurt by people. Well, animals are feeling beings. The animal feels that raw emotion of people hurting her. And what does the animal do? The animal loves her. So he's going to keep and push the people away from her so that they won't hurt her.
So how does a client like that deal with that type of situation? What is her out to get this animal to be peaceful?
And it has nothing. Well, see, the out is her.
That's the paradox.
Yeah, the out is there's nothing wrong with the animal. Now, they have muzzled the animal for 8 years to deal with it. Now, and she said, this is me then. I said, yes, and that's what I'm finding out. When animals can't tell us or they can't tell us much, it's really my clue to look to the family that there is something going on. The animal is acting like a mirror. being reflective, and it really has something to do with the dynamic that's going on. So I said, you know, whatever feels comfortable to you, perhaps a therapist going in and talking about, where does this fear come from? Find the origin of it, because if you do, the fear will be gone. If the fear is gone, guess what? Your dog can let go of that behavior. That's how you help the animal.
That all takes place, though, right, Carol, on a telepathic level, that the animal feels that you're at peace, that there's some part of your energy that's at peace now and isn't carrying that, so it doesn't have to dynamically function in this capacity anymore,
exactly.
Correct?
Exactly. The behavior is over. It's done. It's done. Just like the horse changed overnight. Just like, you know, the cat Raspberry changed overnight. This can happen quickly, depending on how willing is the family to work on it. But what I tell them is, if you choose not to do anything about it yourselves, the dynamic can't change. The animal can't change in a vacuum. The animal needs your help because it's something that's going on within the family. And don't look at it as though that there's something wrong with you. There isn't. What the animal's projecting is just a part and aspect of yourself that really needs to be nurtured. That's all. So this is where animals become some of our greatest teachers and role models, because one of the primary reasons that they're in our lives is to teach us how to love ourselves the way they love us unconditionally. That's their goal for us. That's what they try to do every day of their lives with us, is to teach us how to love ourselves. And they will do it in lots of different ways. You know, they want to be of service. They always have wanted that. And they don't want us to be in any kind of pain in any way. They don't want us to be in pain physically, emotionally, spiritually, mentally. They will do whatever it takes to help us, which is absolutely incredible. So for me, I look and say, oh my gosh, you know, this is free therapy. Take it. And most people will change because of their animals, because they know that they love them and they feel safe with the animals.
So if you had a word to say to a 15-year-old who could use the relationship with a cat to transform himself, what would you say?
I guess I would say, suppose you really liked somebody in school and they didn't like you, but you really wanted, there was some kind of wanting that you had. You really wanted to get to know this person. You wanted this person to be your friend. Wouldn't you feel bad that that person wasn't allowing you in to their life, that was shutting you off? You know, wouldn't you want that person to open up, to really get to know you and to give you a chance, to give you that opportunity to know who you were? You know, wouldn't you want that? So if he could look at it from child to child, and it would be no different, would you be willing to really give this animal a chance to see who this animal possibly could be with you and possibly what this animal might be able to offer?
That's awesome. You can find Carol Gurney under Gurney, G-U-R-N-E-Y, Institute.com. And you can pick up the book, The Language of Animals, 7 Steps to Communicating with Animals by Carol Gurney, or is that on Amazon? Where should they buy your book?
They can go on my website, and we have under products, they'll see the book, and it will link them to Amazon. Yeah.
Fabulous. Now, you have an entire horse ranch where you live, don't you, and train?
I do. Well, I have an arena, and I have 2 horses on the property, and I've got a dog and a cat.
That's awesome. Now, do you do any work with children and animals?
You know, children do come to the workshop because parents recognize that their children already have this ability and they want to enhance it. And I've tutored, you know, there are parents that really feel that their children have the ability, and so I will sometimes tutor with them, mentor them. But children come to the workshop as well. Yeah.
I think it would be fantastic for children.
Yeah, and then, you know, we also have, I just started this, because there are a lot of people out there that can't get to a workshop, they can't travel, they don't have the money to fly into an area, and if they don't live in California where I am, or they can't get to another area where I'm teaching at, we started these 3-hour webinars, and they're really going beautifully, so that, you know, people can also have a way of learning how to do this from their own home, which is really nice. And then, of course, we've got the CDs and DVDs and that for people to learn as well.
So 3-hour webinars, do these take place on Saturdays or?
On different times. We mostly have them on Sundays. But last time I did it on a Saturday, and my assistant told me never to do that because I'm not a computer person. I got through it, but it was a bit stressful for me making sure that I was, you know, clicking the right buttons and this and that. So they'll usually be on a Sunday, you know, from 10 to 1.
Well, that's awesome. I really want to thank you for being on the show and for coming and sharing yourself for an hour with myself and audiences who will be listening from now till the end of time.
Oh, Kim, you know, thanks for inviting me. You know, I love to talk about what I do. It's my passion. I love it. I love to help people understand that, you know, who animals truly are. You know, they're just like we are. There's no difference. They just happen to be in a different body and to speak a language that we do speak. We just are, it's a language that we haven't used in a long time. So.
Thank you so much. And I hope that you will come back. If you would like to share anything about Simba, that's fine. And I'd also like to invite you back to maybe talk to some kids on the show.
Sure. You know, and there's so much more to talk about, you know, so many different issues of animal communication. I'd be delighted to.
Thank you so much, Carol.
All right. You take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All righty. Bye-bye now.